This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Money Control. This is Jerome Anthony and you're listening to In the News, our daily podcast where we give you the top news developments from India and around the world. First up, we'll be talking about immense or rather massive incidents of violence being reported from the north of India and other parts in the country. There is a lot of anger here. Even if you go onto social media, you put on any news channel, you'll find people in hordes protesting against the CAA or the Citizenship Amendment Act, which has been implemented recently. To tell us what's happening today, I have Money Control's Atharva Pandit with me. Hi and welcome to the show, Atharv.
Hello, Jerome.
Quite a grim picture, Atharv. Since the Modi government came to power in 2014, this has been... we've not seen such widespread protests in India. What exactly happened today?
In fact, Jerome, I would say that we haven't seen such widespread protests, particularly student protests, in India for a long, long time now.
Okay.
The 2012 protests were one thing and they were concentrated on one thing. This here is concentrated on in one city. This here is a widespread protest across India.
Right.
Even as we speak, there have been incidents of violence in East Delhi. Mm-hmm. We are not sure of the details yet because the details are emerging even as we speak. Reports have indicated that this was a protest against the Citizenship Amendment Act, like you mentioned. And it turned violent in East Delhi's Silampur and Jafarabad areas when demonstrators reportedly pelted stones at police personnel, and the police personnel then fired tear gas to disperse the crowd. A senior police officer told news agency Reuters that the protest began at around 12 p.m. and that the police fired tear gas to push back the protesters, which were swarming to the barricades and throwing stones. The same police officer told Reuters that at least two police personnel have been injured, and cars were allegedly damaged, and roads were strewn with rocks.
Okay. Atharv, let's give our listeners a little bit of a background to this. Why are these citizens on the streets in India, and why are they protesting in Delhi? What are their demands?
So they are not just protesting in Delhi, they are protesting, as you mentioned, across India.
Yeah.
And why is this protest across India? It's because the Citizenship Amendment Act, which the government passed in both the houses of the parliament, states that the persecuted minorities in three countries, which are Afghanistan, Pakistan and Bangladesh, would be provided citizenship in India because they are religiously persecuted in these three countries. Now the argument that critics are saying is that the act itself is anti-Muslim, it targets one particular religion. Critics have also been saying that clubbed with the National Register of Citizens, which our Home Minister Amit Shah has said will come, clubbed with that, the National Register of Citizens, it becomes dangerous for the minorities, particularly the Muslims in India.
Okay.
That is what the critics have said.
Okay.
And which is why these are protests which are, their demand is pretty simple. That the government should take back the CAA.
Okay.
And which is why the protesters are hitting the street saying that this act goes against the very grain of Indian democracy. Constitution and
right.
Indian democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And which is why the protesters and the protests have been sparked.
So
these protests, like we saw, they have been spreading across India, particularly in universities and educational institutions. What started with Jamia around Jamia, that is still being investigated, whether the Jamia students were involved or not during the violence. But what started with Jamia, then students in Aligarh Muslim University in Aligarh, then the Tata Institute of Social Sciences in Mumbai, IIT Bombay, then Pondicherry University, Jadavpur University in Calcutta. These were some of the universities which students in some of these universities also protested and said that they back Jamia, the students of Jamia, and that they are protesting, also protesting against the CAA.
Okay.
So this is in brief why the protests have flared up across India.
It's better late than never, Athar. Educated students are realizing that there is a problem. And what did the Prime Minister have to say about this?
The Prime Minister also said that the condemned the violent protests, mm-hmm, in a tweet, mm-hmm, in a series of tweets actually. Mm-hmm. Today, while he was addressing a rally in Jharkhand, pole-bound Jharkhand, mm-hmm, he said that he addressed the students and he said that the opposition parties are using the students to further their political agenda. Mm-hmm. This is what he, not in, in these exact words, okay, but this is what he meant. Mm-hmm. And he also targeted Congress and its allies and the opposition in general, mm-hmm, to say that these parties are spreading an atmosphere of creating an atmosphere of fear, mm-hmm, and that the CAA, the new law, would not affect any citizen, any Indian citizen.
Mm-hmm.
He did not mention NRC, and this is what the Prime Minister had to say. He, okay, said he appealed to the students, mm-hmm, that his government listens, mm-hmm, to their criticisms,
mm-hmm,
and that they should express their criticism through via debate rather, mm-hmm, than through violence.
Debate or not, I'm quite sure these students would have moved the judiciary system in India. What's the update there, Rakesh?
Yes, Jerome, so the students have actually approached the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court, however, said that the High Courts should be approached first.
Okay.
So the Supreme Court basically directed the those who have petitioned to go to the High Court first.
Mm-hmm.
A bench led by Chief Justice of India, S.A. Bobade,
mm-hmm,
was hearing the petitions,
okay,
which had been filed by Alumni Association of Jamia Millia Islamia.
Mm-hmm.
And here I quote the Chief Justice. He said that we don't want to spend time knowing facts. You should go to courts below first.
Okay.
The bench said.
Okay. This is what the bench said.
This is what the bench said.
All right. Athar, thank you so much for all these updates. I pray that, the violence ends soon and, better sense prevails among citizens and politicians and the judiciary.
So do I, Jerome. Thank you.
Thanks, Athar. Next, we are going to be discussing news from neighboring Pakistan, where former President Parvez Musharraf has been sentenced to death by a special court. To tell us all about that, I have Money Control's Nachiket Deoskar with me. Hi and welcome to the show, Nachiket. Nachiket, so tell us, what's the news coming from Pakistan?
Yes, so the special court in Pakistan today has sentenced Parvez Musharraf to death. This is in connection with a case where he had suspended the constitution in 2007 and imposed emergency in Pakistan. This was his, of course, this was his bid to stay in power towards the end of his political leadership there,
right,
in that country. Let me just run you through what has happened in the case. He was, of course, the president of Pakistan from 2001 to 2008, when he was sort of deposed, and then a civilian government took over. It was the Asif Zardari government which came to power.
Right.
So between 2008 and 2013, nothing much really happened about this. But in 2013, when Nawaz Sharif came to power, he initiated an inquiry into this matter. Remember, Nawaz Sharif was the one who Musharraf had deposed in,
right,
a military coup back in 1999.
Right, right.
So this case was opened the following year. The charges were filed against Musharraf.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, Musharraf said that he needs to move out of the country for medical treatment, which was, of course, accepted by the court.
Mm-hmm.
He has been living in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates since. And today, of course, he has been sentenced to death. Throughout this period, of course, Musharraf claims, or rather maintains, that he did not do anything wrong, that the decision he had taken to suspend the constitution and impose emergency were in agreement with his cabinet,
mm-hmm,
and with his government. So there was nothing wrong about it. That is what he claims.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the court has not agreed to that.
All right. So, Nachiket, I hear that Parvez Musharraf indeed is on his deathbed. He's pretty critical there. And what are the chances of him even, being flown out of the UAE? Or will he even get back to Pakistan?
Jerome, it remains to be seen what happens to him now. Because remember, this is only a special court.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he still has a few chances to challenge this verdict higher above.
Okay.
And it is significant, and this is actually unprecedented of sorts, because Pakistan has seen many military coups.
Right.
But at no point has ever any such military leader been even charged for any such major crime, and this guy has been convicted of it.
Right.
So this is extraordinary, so we do not really know how things will pan out from here.
Thanks for all these updates. So moving back home, the government is striking hard with its crackdown on bogus GST claims. To tell us all about that, I have a Money Control Siddesh Raut with me. Hi and welcome to the show, Siddesh.
Hi, Jerome. Thank you for having me here.
Siddesh, so what's the latest? Culprits are being nabbed, I hear.
Yes, Jerome. The Directorate General of Goods and Services Tax Intelligence Unit, or the DGGI in short, its Mumbai zone has arrested one kingpin by the name of Tejas Desai.
Mm-hmm.
He has been charged with evading taxes, or rather duping tax evasion to the tune of about 41 crore. Mm-hmm. And he's done this in a very... explicit manner. Desai has apparently used 15 different companies, and he's made claims for input tax credit worth 41 crore using these companies. But it has been found that there has been no goods that has been supplied under this input tax credit that has been called for.
Mm-hmm.
So he's made these bogus entries using these 15 different companies to claim tax worth 41 crores.
Okay, so basically what he did was he used 15 companies.
Mm-hmm.
He claimed a refund of GST without supplying goods, just forging documents. So Siddesh, how did this come to light, and how did the DGGI, finally nab Desai?
So the DGGI first conducted this searches at the premises of forex dealers,
mm-hmm.
commission agents and freight forwarders.
Mm-hmm.
And during the course of its investigation, it found out that Desai, who is also a previous defaulter by this. So Desai apparently was a director or a promoter or even an operator of these companies. And he had gotten cahoots with a lot of people to utilize input tax credit worth 41.15 crore rupees, and even availing IGST refunds worth 38.55 crore rupees on the basis of bogus and fake invoices. And this is according to Seema Jerry Bisht, who is the Principal Additional Director General of the DGGI.
Alright.
And she was the one who is heading this investigation.
Okay.
And with all this data in hand, then the DGGI conducted searches at the premises of Desai in September, and they found all these bogus entries,
mm-hmm.
That were created to avail these refunds.
So Siddesh, is this the first time that Desai has been accused of being involved in such a major scam?
Well, Jerome, Desai has been previously accused of certain crimes in this area in the past.
Mm-hmm.
He's been arrested. He was arrested by the Central Excise Department of Surat in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
This was in connection with export rebate frauds. And he was also arrested earlier by the Directorate of Revenue Intelligence in 2007, where he was accused for overvaluation of exports.
Moving on, Siddesh, we have IMF Chief Economist Geeta Gopinath, who's made a statement recently raising concerns over India's slowing economic growth.
Right.
Could you just tell us a little more about that?
Right, Jerome. So the IMF Chief Economist had actually mentioned a few factors that were contributing to the slowdown in the economic growth. And I quote, "A sharp moderation of investment, slowing consumption growth and an inventory rundown contributed to the slowdown," unquote.
Okay, and she did suggest some reforms. What exactly were they?
So Gopinath was calling for many government policies. This is ranging across three key policies. Mm-hmm. The first being to basically clean up the entire banking situation over there. Mm-hmm. She suggested to clean up the other financial institutions, banks, corporate balance sheets, and also improve the governance of public sector banks, which has always more or less been in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also called for reviving bank credits. And also at the same time, being careful to keep a track on the on the NBFCs.
Mm-hmm.
Because there have been a lot of initiatives that have been put forward to enhance the credit dispersal and address the liquidity crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And she suggested that the situation surrounding these NBFCs be closely monitored to ensure that no downside risks, or rather to no raw risks come across in the process. There was also another one where she was concerning on the macro level, fiscal consolidation of India's economy.
Mm-hmm.
She suggested consolidation over the medium term by, you know, reducing the debt levels, the public debt levels, improving the tax compliance and administration, and as well as improve fiscal transparency.
Okay.
And finally, she had suggested that to increase employment growth.
Okay.
We carry out labor, land, and product market reforms.
Mm-hmm.
And also carry out infrastructure investment. And also, at the same time, ensure that proper investments are made in the health and education side.
Mm-hmm.
So that this growth is a little more equitable, and more of India's population can get to benefit.
Okay.
From this.
All right. With India aiming at a 5 trillion economy by 2022, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Anything did Gopinath have to say on that?
Well, she did suggest a lot of things, as I mentioned earlier. But Gopinath also said that India is doing a few things right as well towards reaching this target. First of all, she mentioned that this $5 trillion target in itself is a good objective. It should be there. We should aim high and try to achieve that mark. And she also mentioned that our commitment to support our rural economy, which is still a major chunk of that supports a lot of our citizens. So commitments to support that rural economy and also boosting infrastructure spending and streamlining the GST that has been rolled out close to 3 years ago. The ongoing streamlining of that, direct tax reforms, are all steps that have been taken by our government in the right direction.
All right, Sid, I hope our economy does reach 5 trillion and none of our brethren in this country is jobless, and we live more fruitful lives. Thank you for all these updates.
Thank you, Jerome. Wish the same.
Now a word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app. The offer is available on Android and the web.
With that, we wrap this episode of In The News. In case you have any query or suggestion, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. I repeat, that's mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.